Hi, my name is Dave. I run accountsrecovery.net, and I'm excited to bring you today's webinar based on the results and insights from a survey that was conducted a couple of months ago about employee performance. The survey, which accountsrecovery.net conducted in partnership with DAX Software Systems, asked a number of questions about how collection agencies compensate employees and track their performance. A free copy of the results is available by going to www.dax, and that's D-A-K-C-S, dax.com/employee-survey-download, all one word. Today's webinar will discuss some of the results of the survey and how those insights can be used to maximize employee productivity and minimize employee turnover. This webinar is being generously sponsored by DAX Software Systems. You'll get the chance to hear more about the company a little later in our program. I wanted to take a quick minute and say a few words about accountsrecovery.net. Accountsrecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use, and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me take a minute and tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Rick Bonitzer presides over Credit Collection Partners, a collection agency specializing in collecting government debt that is located in central Illinois. Credit Collection Partners has grown from four collectors when Rick joined the company to having four times as many now. This company is also in the process of rolling out health insurance benefits to its staff. Rick, who earned a Bachelor's of Science degree in Business Administration from Columbia College of Missouri, is married with three kids, presently ages 5, 7, and 9. Kelly Kruger is the Vice President of Organizational Development and Training for CBE Companies. Kelly has 22 years of experience in training and development and currently oversees all matters relating to employee development and engagement. She's been with CBE on and off since 1996 and specializes in sales, persuasion, customer service, recovery, and management training. Her training focuses on the development of human talent, utilizing the latest innovations in human performance technology. Donna Nicholson-Steef is Executive Director and Chief Compliance Officer at the Credit Bureau of Lancaster County Collection Services Division, where she oversees financial and operational functions. In addition to working at the Credit Bureau of Lancaster County, Donna serves as a collection industry as Vice President of the Mid-Atlantic Collectors Association, actually that's now Interim President, as well as on the Special Committee on Small Agencies and the Council of Delegates for ACA International. She previously served on ACA International's Audit Financial Review Committee and ACA International Board of Directors for 8 years. She was a recipient of ACA's Unit Leader of the Year Award in 2010. Kelly Parsons O'Brien is the president of Pacific Credit Services, formerly known as Credit Bureau Associates. She's a third-generation debt collector and has worked for the family business since 1994. She took a small break from the business for an adventure in college and a couple of jobs, including work at Wells Fargo Bank in Sierra Springwater. Kelly came back to Credit Bureau Associates in 1998 to take on the adventure of being collections manager. In January of 2015, Kelly, along with her business partner, purchased the company. She also serves as president for the California Association of Collectors. The format for today's webinar will be a discussion moderated by myself. We encourage everybody to submit questions, and we'll get to them when the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please enter it into the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel. For those of you who haven't done one of my webinars before, this is an audio-only event. There is no video component, so if you're not seeing anything on your screen, you're not missing out. A recording of this event will be made available in the coming days on accountsrecovery.net. And with that, let's move on and start our discussion. So we're talking about a survey that was conducted of collection agencies. The report's available. I know a lot of people have gone out and downloaded a copy of it. Let's start maybe with just sort of an overview of the survey. And Rick, I'll ask you to, you know, give you the chance to chime in first. What was it about the survey results that surprised you most?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I appreciate the invitation to participate in the webinar. Honestly, I thought the survey was pretty straightforward. I didn't see anything particular jump off the page, with exception, I think, to one slide, and that was the question of how much will your staff size change in 2018 compared with last year. I thought there would be a lot more responses of growth generally than I saw. you know, 40% said the same, no growth, really? I thought, with the current business climate, I thought agencies would be growing at a pretty good clip. So I think just that one growth slide kind of shocked me a little bit. Everything else was, pretty straightforward.
So I guess it just means more opportunity for you then, right? Nobody else is growing.
Yeah, or even lower. I mean, was that 3%, 10% lower, 31% between 1% and 10%? Obviously, for smaller businesses, you add a few bodies and the percentages jump pretty drastically. The larger the organization, you know, the more bodies represent a percentage swing. I guess you can look at it that way as well.
Well, you know, and Rick, one of the things that I thought about when I looked at that slide is I wonder, like, through automation, are we able to work the accounts more effectively and not put in bodies? I mean, I know that's one of the things that our office is constantly looking at is what else can I do and not have a person there? You know, like, we added IVR, which is way more popular than I thought it would be. Our next step is maybe some type of integration through a dispute portal where the consumer can communicate. Mm-hmm. Not on the phone, not use so much of a collector body. So that was kind of the thing that I took away from that slide is I wondered how much automation is taking staff away from our office since consumers.
Terrific point. Really, yes.
They don't want to talk anymore. You know, they don't want to really talk to the collectors. They want to do everything by email or some other way.
Yeah, no, that's a terrific point. I hadn't thought about that, but that makes a ton of sense. We actually use a virtual agent, as part of our offering as well. And we try and push as much traffic as we can to our virtual agent, it's on all of our letters, it's on our hold music, if we do a voicemail drop, it's included in there. And that virtual agent, that you can set up payment plans, you can dispute, you can pay in full, et cetera. And it gets some decent traction, but it's not a replacement, I don't think, for bodies. At least I haven't found it yet to be that. It's an awesome supplement. Totally recommend that to anybody that doesn't have something like that. But I don't know if that would be a replacement, at least from my experience.
Good point.
It's pretty great though.
Yeah, one of the things that jumped out to me on the survey was the time spent training. So there was 42% of the survey responded that they spend less than 40 hours or up to 40 hours doing training. And I would love to figure out a way to get it under 40 hours, or even in the 12%, I think, responded that they do it less than 20 hours. And it would be interesting to see how I could get a compliant collector on the floor in less than 20 hours. I think that it would save me a lot of training time. So I would be interested, maybe Mike, in our next webinar as to how to fast track our training program.
Yeah, ditto. Yeah, I couldn't believe 1.6% less than 10 hours, really? So they're on the phone collecting money in a day or two? That was kind of shocking, too. Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah, that's where
I have to, chime in also. That was the one thing that jumped out, like, glaring to me, was that only 56% train more than 1 week. And in today's litigious, it's always been litigious, but with TCPA and call baiting and the Lexington laws of the world, I can't imagine with all of the scenarios that a collector is going to experience training in. We train for at least 2 weeks, and that includes making calls and shadowing and things like that. It's, there's a productive, piece to it. But to release a collector to the phones where they're kind of on their own in less than 2 weeks is, I wouldn't be able to sleep at night.
Yeah, I was alarmed by that as well. I mean, I think one of the biggest struggles, this is Kelly, one of the biggest struggles we have is the part-time training. So I wonder if some of that is fitting into this as well. But I mean, I can't imagine not spending 80 hours doing a training for new hires, who especially have no collection experience, which is the issue we have is the people we're training don't have any collection experience. So can't imagine training them how to do that job, plus all of the laws that they need to follow in 1 week or less.
Yeah, agreed. In our office, we generally will have about a week's worth of classroom style stuff. And then week number two at some point, depending on the pace of the class, if it's just one individual at a time, if it's a small group of people, there might be different, you know, learning paces, but generally they'll, you know, start making calls with, you know, a trainer or a team leader or something like that, you know, in week two. We found pretty good. And I'm with you, whoever spoke first about, you know, if there is a way to fast track that and save time, I'd be interested in learning about that too.
I can see what my next webinar is going to be on. So we talked a little bit about the training part. I'm also curious, and Donna, I'd like to, you know, hear your input first on this question. Were there any other comparisons that you could make between the results and your own operation?
Yes, much of the results I likened to our organization. We collect mostly healthcare. We have about, I guess, 10 collectors total. So we're right in that 71% range of the survey results. If I could just cycle back to the first question and make a comment on Rick's point regarding sure. growth. One of the things that I think has drastically changed in the whole collection industry for some of us smaller to mid-sized agencies is, you know, these hospitals are merging. They're being acquired and they're merging into these big conglomerates. And many of us have lost our independent hospitals. And so, you know, where the days of going out and being able to grab a hospital here and there, those days are over. Independent hospitals basically don't exist anymore. And if they do, it's not going to be for long. So in the healthcare space, we had to really regroup and say, okay, this is our target market is different. The landscape is different. These big conglomerates are not looking at the credit bureau of Lancaster County or any type of, you know, we collect coast to coast, but we're still a small agency. And I think that was one reason in particular where I could see growth being a little bit slower because we're backpedaling after losing clients to mergers.
No, that's a terrific point. Thanks for bringing that up. And you're exactly right. That's kind of our wheelhouse in Illinois too, is rural hospitals and healthcare, not so much the urban areas, because, you know, like you said, with the mergers and acquisitions and it's extremely competitive. And a lot of times they'll go out for RFP, you know, and choose the low cost provider. And then you got a big national company swooping in and making a tiny little margin, getting that contract. And I can definitely appreciate that.
Excellent. At this point, I'd like to pause the discussion for just a couple of minutes and introduce Ashley Hayden from DAX to say a few words. Ashley?
Hi, guys. Hi, everyone. I just wanted to thank everyone for joining us today. We're excited to be teaming up with the Counter and sponsoring this webinar and the survey insights. You know, employee performance has a lot of facets. We've learned a lot of ideas that we keep coming up with new webinars on, I noticed. It's been awesome. But I also wanted to mention, you know, a lot of people know of DAX. We've been in the industry for over 35 years now. You know, we're a local Ogden, Utah-based debt collection software company. But what I think comes more of that is the longevity we've had has been built on our partnerships and relationships with our clients. And just a quick synopsis of the story behind how this survey came about was it all started with our president really having some conversations with a past client of ours. Who no longer uses DAX. However, we've continued that relationship. And he was having a problem he was trying to solve. As we continued, you know, those conversations and we continued talking to other customers, we found that this really is across the board and it wasn't just, you know, one agency in particular. So these employee performance problems or insights, it just opened an entire area that we want to dive further into. You know, questions like how do you pay your collectors? How are you dealing with the, you know, unemployment rate being so low? It's things like that, and really these conversations that we have, it's just really, it's exciting. It's great to be a part of. So having said all that, I just want to say thank you to Accounts Recovery for hosting this. And then panelists, thank you so much for your involvement. I just hope everyone who's listening today can take, you know, some actions and take something from the webinar. And then also, if you do want those results, you know, if things stand out, feel free to download them again at the dax.com/employee survey download, and just learn a little bit more of, you know, what other agencies might be doing, and we can just start these conversations and keep them going. So thank you.
Thanks, Ashley. One of the data points that I might be in the minority that surprised me was kind of actually one of the last ones. We talked about training, but the one before that, what percentage of your employees stay at least 3 months? And, you know, only 37.5% of the people, of the survey respondents, said that at least 90% of their staff, their employees, stay at least 3 months, which to me indicates that there's a, you know, turnover is a fairly significant problem. And I'd like to get the panel's input, starting with Kelly Krueger, if you don't mind. But, you know, some of the things that you can do to try and cut down on employee turnover.
I mean, yeah, employee turnover is an issue in the industry across the board, and especially the larger your companies get. So I think that's something we're in as an industry, as we grow, as the survey says we're going to, we absolutely have to look at employee turnover and the turnover rate. One of the things I'm looking at when I look at unemployment is the unemployment rate in the world today, in the United States, is pretty low. So it's causing people to look more than they ever did before, which is both good and bad for us, because, you know, they're looking to leave their current employers because they know there's opportunity out there. So we also have to be the company that they want to go to. So how do we stop our employees from looking? Because it's too late. Once they've turned in their resignation, it's too late. But what we need to wonder is what caused them to start looking. And so what we do as an organization is we do stay interviews and just meet with our employees. While they're in training, we actually say, we ask them questions like, what would make you leave an organization? What makes you stay at an organization? What makes you happy to come to work every day? Because, you know, we all have to work. We just want to be the place they want to come work at. So and really working on maybe a bench plan for them. Like, how can we build a succession plan for them? So what is our goal for them? Because I think the hard part about the collection industry is people who come and become collectors, they see it as a job in the meantime. And so how do we keep them so they see it as a career, and maybe creating a succession plan for them so they're loyal to the organization? I mean, collections, we always try to make this job fun, and that's just not going to be enough anymore. Like, creating a fun environment for our collectors, because it's a hard job. We need to do much more than that, and especially with this new generation coming up. It can't just be fun. There's got to be a purpose behind what they do, and something's got to be in it for them.
You know,
I love the idea of a stay interview, Kelly. That's interesting. You know, we're all used to exit interviews or an applicant interview, but a stay interview is that's interesting. I think I might take you up on that. when I looked at the survey, you know, look, we've all had bad hires. And you know, one of the things we look at is, did we not vet the person properly, or did we not communicate the job properly to the applicant, or did we spend enough time equipping the new collector for success? Because a frustrated new collector who feels defeated, unable to overcome stalls and objections, is likely to leave. They feel unproductive, they feel unqualified, and that if that is a result of a lack of proper training, you could be potentially losing a high-achieving collector. So when we hire, it's kind of like putting the puzzle pieces together. It's never just one piece of information that that you use. You're putting all these together. We background screen. We have other collectors come in and do a second interview with the person and really try to get a feel for, are we a good fit for this person? And is this person a good fit for us? Once we've made that decision and we hire the person, then we want to make sure that before we put them on the phones, they are set up for success. So I found that to be helpful.
This is Rick. Yeah, excellent comments so far. And I love that idea that was shared earlier to the stay meetings. Wow, that's a good idea. I like that too. I think I'm going to take that away. My supervisors do monthly meetings with each of the collectors, talking about the prior month's KPIs, which might be a nice segment of the next discussion point here. But they'll talk about KPIs and performance. And even, you know, other things as well. Are you happy? Are you not happy? What are you struggling with? You know, that type of thing. So sometimes those monthly meetings kind of root out some, you know, maybe some negativity that might be brewing or something like that. I've also got like a floor manager. Most agencies have kind of a collector manager, a floor manager. One of the roles for that person though in our shop is also to be a collector advocate. You know, someone that the collector can confide in, you know, that will, you know, keep their issues private if they need to, or, you know, basically that they can just kind of go to instead of perhaps going directly to senior management or something like that. So the collector advocate position we have found to have been pretty successful. And you're right. I mean, the call center job, the call center / collection job is a rough position. So you got to do whatever you can to kind of make it fun, make it a fun environment, you know, do prizes and giveaways but make it meaningful. And things like that. For an example, a couple of years ago, I did an incentive. It was a trip for two to Las Vegas, airfare and, it was an airfare, hotel, and a few $100 spending money. And, you know, so what did that cost me as the business all in? I forget, maybe close to $1,000. But I'll tell you, my business made way more than $1,000 in additional revenue than $1,000 that month. It's been a couple of years since I looked at it, but it was a tremendous ROI. So little things like that, I think helped big time too. And then someone talked about setting them up for success and setting proper expectations. One of the things I like to throw out there is, you know, if you fail 7 out of 10 times, that's a home run. Think about that for a second. You know, if you're getting payment or a secured promise or something like that out of 3 out of 10 RPCs, that's pretty good. At least in our shop it is. So, but turning it around and talking about 7 out of 10 times you're going to quote fail, you can talk about what fail means and so forth, but that's really weird to think about. But in our industry, that's really good. So setting proper expectations, I think up front is pretty important as well. Also, one last thing, employee referral bonus. We found some of our best new hires come from word of mouth of existing staff. And we throw, you know, a few $100 at them, the existing employee, if they do that. We'll give them like $100 if they pass the training period, you know, the new hire, and then another 200 if they make it 6 months or something like that. So a total of like 300 is, I think, what we're doing. And we've got some good quality referrals as a result.
I'm just catching up on my notes because there's so much good stuff in here. Good stuff on employee turnover. Let's flip the coin a little bit and talk about hiring. You know, the survey results indicate that many collection agencies are expected to grow this year. We talked a little bit about that. And one of the things Kelly Krueger mentioned is the low unemployment rate, which may make it tougher to find qualified candidates. So I'd like to maybe just get a sense from each of the panelists, and Kelly Parsons, if you don't mind starting us off this time, what are some of the best growth strategies to employ when finding employees a little bit tougher than usual?
Well, I think Rick kind of touched on one of my points, was the recruiting and paying employees for referrals. I think that that's something that if you're not doing, you should be doing. Most of the collectors know what it takes and can really sell your company, I think, better than you can to a friend or relative or somebody they know. The other thing that I was kind of thinking of when I went through this picture or went through this question is, we're a bit of a bedroom community. So most people live here at night, but commute into like Sacramento, Concord, San Francisco for more money. And so one of the things I was thinking is maybe like geocaching, where they're like picking Park and Ride or BART and maybe soliciting them like, hey, tired of commuting? We have a great job here. I think the cost involved would be really small to be putting some impressions on different web pages and things. So while people are waiting for BART or waiting for Park and Ride, that maybe you could attract some. Because I think that that's one of the things that sometimes we don't tap into, is that maybe the best employee isn't technically looking for a job right now, but maybe you could suggest that they look for a job. And we've actually had a few successes recently of people that were making a little bit more money in the Bay Area, but were happy to stop commuting, stop dealing with the big commute and move to our office. So that was a really, something that I thought about when I was going through that process. The other thing that we did this time is I interviewed pretty much anybody that applied. I did a phone interview. So if they would call back and schedule the phone interview, I interviewed them. So I didn't really look at my regular candidate when I looked at a resume. Usually I'd say, oh no, they wouldn't be a good fit. No, they wouldn't be a good fit. So I kind of threw that out the window this time. And I actually got 6 really great hires, and 4 of them are working really well. So, you know, we always have a few that don't make it. But that's pretty good in my mind if I hire 6 and 4 are successful. So for me, I'm kind of throwing out what my normal guidelines were when I'm looking at resumes. That was really, really helpful for me. So,
Kelly, I love that idea. I love the idea of stepping out of the box and looking beyond what we normally look for expectations of collectors. One of the things that also I want to piggyback on is when you said maybe the best employee is not out looking for a job. So one of the tactics that we used is that we gave all of our leadership team and some of our collectors, like our team leads or team captains, little business cards that say, I really like the service you gave me, or something to that effect. And we recruited based on the service that we were getting. So like at a restaurant, if your waiter or waitress was really, really good, then you'd give them this card and say, you know what, I think you would be really good in collections. This is what we do. This is the experience that you gain. And recruit to those people who are servicing or out in the service industry. Another thing that we do when we do that is we talk about what you gain by being a collector, because there's such a stigma behind being a collector. So we really gave our leadership team tools to go out and recruit and say, you know, as a collector, you're learning skills that you probably couldn't learn in any other job that you're going to. So you learn problem solving skills, you learn communication skills, you learn negotiation skills, you learn how to be a salesperson, you learn how to, you know, deal with difficult people, like all of those skills that no matter where you go, once you decide to leave the industry, if you ever choose to leave the industry, really are transferable to no matter where you go, and things that you maybe don't learn in college, but you really, it helps you become more what we call street smart.
Yeah, I love the service card, like business card approach. I've done that myself as well. It worked out. But you're also right. You know, you hand out that card, and the debt collection industry has this stigma. You know, so it's almost like you gotta give them the card, but then also have a quick, you know, 2-3-4 minute chat with them to try and break down that stigma, or you might not even get a call back or something like that. But I love that approach too.
And speaking of the stigma, you just kind of made me think of our training program. On day one, we do an orientation, and it begins with our company. But then the second part is all of the positive statistics that come out from Ernst & Young. We share that. And we really make sure that they understand that you are in a noble industry. We do good things and we impact the economy locally and across the board in a very positive way. And we actually teach them how to respond to friends and family when they tell them what their new job is. So one of the things I'll ask is, did you tell anybody about, you know, that you're starting here today? And if so, what was their response? And if the response was, oh, you're going to become one of them, we make sure that we address that and teach them how to respond to change the way we're looked at, because no one is going to change the way we're looked at except for us. No other industry is going to do it for us. We have to do it for ourselves. So we've incorporated that into our training program.
Ooh, that's good. I love that. How to respond to the stigma. Oh, you're going to be one of them. Yeah, it's good. I'm going to share that with my team right there. We've got to do a better job with that, no question. You know, on day one, one of the things that we do, ACA produced a like an intro to debt collection CD or video. We purchased a number of years ago, and I forget, it's like 30 minutes long or an hour long or something like that. But it goes through a couple of common sense scenarios that people just, they kind of take for granted, don't think about, talk about the, you know, the benefit that we add to local and national economies and stuff like that. And that kind of, I think, helps break it down a little bit. But I really love what you just said about how to respond to the stigma to friends and family, you know, kind of arm your employee, because you don't want them to be embarrassed. You don't want to say, oh, I'm going to go, you know, work here at this collection agency. And they're like, eek, you know, and then it just goes south and negative. That's not good for anybody.
Right. So and a new person that. Doesn't know otherwise. They don't know otherwise. So it really is up to us to teach them. And I think the Ernst & Young results are very impactful. And ACA breaks it down on a national level and then your unit level or state level. And it really shows that, no, we are not one of them. You know, we treat everyone with dignity, and we don't need a law to tell us to do that. And they're trained on, they quickly see how the staff treats everyone with dignity, and we just, you know, kind of warn them. That's not always reciprocated, but the debtor is not under the FDCPA. You are. So, you know, we want to make sure that we're teaching them how to handle, you know, very adversarial calls too, but they teaching them right up front, about who you are and what you're doing and making sure that they are on board with that. This is a noble career and you should be proud of it.
Well said.
Thanks.
Kelly Parsons, I want to circle back to something you said during your answer when you were talking about, you know, doing that phone interview with everybody that maybe you wouldn't normally do, and the six new hires and, you know, possibly four good employees. Can you talk a little bit about how much extra time, you know, you had to spend or invest in doing those extra phone interviews? And maybe, do you know, of those six hires, how many of them maybe would you have overlooked had you just kind of done your normal review, you know, resume review screening process?
So I would say definitely half of them. So there were, out of the six, there was three of them that did not have the normal resume that I would be looking for. They didn't have really a lot of customer service experience. They had dealt with customers, but not really in the way that I would look for it. So normally I would want somebody with like call center experience. The three didn't come with a lot of computer experience. So that was a little bit of the training curve that we dealt with, where, you know, like kind of training them a little bit more on the computers. And then a couple of them had like job breaks, like big breaks in their employment. So those were kind of things that I normally would kind of shied away from. And so for me, you know, it gave me three that I may not have dealt with. The time, it did take some time. So what I did is I broke them down into like groups of four, and I interviewed them like every half hour. I say that probably total, it took me about 6 hours to get through them, between the emails back and forth, scheduling the time, and then actually making the phone calls. many of them just wouldn't, you know, and I guess when I say 6 hours, I blocked off 6 hours of time, but, you know, you'd schedule 4 interviews, 2 people would answer their phone, 2 people wouldn't. So that was kind of the way that we did it. And then we also changed our hiring process. So once I did the phone interview, then we had them come back in for, like I invited them in for like an open house. And so there was 3 at a time or 4 at a time that we would bring in. We would go over kind of like what the job was, what it meant to be a debt collector. I had our collector, 2 of our collectors come in and talk a little bit about what it means to be on the floor. And then they were offered, in the event that they wanted to stay, to be interviewed individually, they could. And so any of them that wanted to stay, they went over to our other suite, filled out an application. And when they were finished, they got an on-the-spot interview with one of our managers. So, you know, with between those two kind of changes in our process, I don't know which one was perfect, but I do know that I interviewed a lot more people that I wouldn't normally have interviewed. And in my mind, that was worth the extra few hours.
And Kelly, this is Donna. Do you background screen applicants?
So yeah, so California is lots of fun. So it's very, we can only do certain things. So ours are a job offer pending a background investigation. This was the first time that I had somebody that when I did the criminal background, they had like some theft issues. And I was like, yeah, I don't think that that would be good handling all this personal data. So we went ahead and retracted the job offer. But it's very strange in California. You have to notify them, tell them that this is our plan. They have a chance to dispute it, and you can go through this process. So that's the only kind of like, I always have to make sure that I have a full 2 weeks from the time I do job offer till the time that I have a first day. And for people that aren't working, that two weeks is sometimes kind of difficult. So what I try to do is make it so that if they, when I hire them, that they only have to work like 4 to 5 days before they get their first paycheck. So what I try to do is hire them kind of like at the end of a pay period, so they'll get their paycheck quicker. Because if I hire them at the beginning of their pay period, then they'll have to work like a full 2 weeks before getting their first check. And I think that that's difficult for somebody that's not working. And I want to make it, you know, I don't want them to go to find another job while they're waiting for me to make the offer.
Thank you. I agree also. Theft is an absolute deal breaker. With our industry of, you know, all of the sensitive, protected information, and you're taking credit cards and checks over the phone. You have all of their insurance information, date of birth, social security. It's just, you can't risk it.
Agreed. I hold on. Chime in real quick, Mike. If you don't mind, just wanted to touch on Kelly's like kind of quasi, you know, job fair open house idea. Love that. In fact, I just met with my management team just this week on that subject. We're going to plan to do that kind of tactfully, of course. You know, perhaps maybe on like a Saturday morning or afternoon where we're not going to be open. You know, all sensitive information is completely you know, outside of view or something like that. But maybe even have like a barbecue or catered in, you know, come have a cup of coffee with us and talk about, you know, this opportunity type thing. And you know, see how that goes in the community post this, this job fair type thing, this open house, you know, in local community colleges, and the paper and perhaps even social media and things like that. So I'm hopeful that'll, you know, cast a real wide net, and then it'll be, you know, on us to possibly narrow that down.
So Rick, the only thing that I would like maybe suggest in this is that I think that the key to this was the on-site job interview. So like, I don't know, you know, maybe you'll have enough management staff or even like a pre-interview process, so that like if they come in for the open house and they like what they hear, that they'll be given an opportunity to interview right away. And I felt like that way you could really find out who you were interviewing, who was coming in, who was really interested in a job. And then maybe you follow up with like a more formal face, you know, a second interview, but giving them an opportunity to kind of tell their story to somebody on your staff, I think was really key for this process to work, at least for our office.
I like it. I hadn't thought about that, Kelly. No, I appreciate that. I made that note, and I'm going to review that with my team next go around for sure. Good feedback. And it makes a lot of sense too. Thanks.
No.
Thank you.
Let's move on to another portion of the survey that may generate some interesting discussion. As can probably be expected, many agencies said that compliance was a key factor in determining an employee's performance or compensation. But what was interesting, maybe a little bit interesting, was the number of complaints received was among the least popular KPIs tracked in determining performance. And I'm curious if any of the panel had any insights. And Donna, maybe we'll get you to weigh in first if you had any insights as to why you think there was that disconnect.
So coming from the smaller collection agency world, formally incorporating compliance into your commission structures, we've always cared about compliance, of course. That's always been a top priority, but formally incorporating it into the pay and into the bonus and commission structure, I think is something a lot of the agencies have yet to do. And I, from the ones that I've spoken to, it was more so kind of logistics. What exactly are we looking for and how much monitoring are we going to do? And based on our findings, how much are we docking the collector? So I'm hoping some really good ideas come out of this. I'd love to hear what the rest of the panelists have to say. We have incorporated compliance into our bonus structure, but I will say I am definitely open to some improvement with the way we're doing it. So I'd love to hear what the other panelists have to say.
I don't mind taking this one. I'm a smaller agency, so we have 12 to 15 collectors. And so what we did was we set up a performance bonus program. So half of their bonus is guaranteed, and the other half is based on their performance, their weekly performance audits. So we audit 10 accounts a week. It's a very small percentage of what they're working. But that's the only thing that matters based on their audit. The other reviews of accounts and call audits that we do are more for like coaching and feedback and retraining. But those 40 accounts a month do affect half of their bonus. And so we look for things like making sure they're sending a validation notice, make sure that they're coding the account correctly, make sure that they're updating permission to leave a message, call with an auto dialer. So all of those things. And I always like to tell the story of my top collector who lost about $150 for an FDCPA violation. She talked to the consumer and missed the fact that the validation notice had come out and she didn't send it. And so they get an automatic fail for that week if there's an FDCPA violation. And it cost her $150 at the end of the month because she had a really good commission month. But she's never done it since. I've never found another account that she didn't send that validation notice on. So I think that for our office, it initially did feel the same way you're talking. It was overwhelming. How am I going to implement it? But once I did it, it was really actually pretty quick. On most of my collectors, it takes me maybe 15 to 20 minutes to get through 10 accounts and audit them. So it's a pretty small percentage of my time each week. And I'm finding that the improvement from policy and procedure and compliance has improved immensely because there was no negative. One of the payroll people that you deal with, human resources people, said that they would rather the program be where they earn that bonus instead of losing it. And that was one thing that we looked at, and I just couldn't figure out a way. So I'm like, I'm going to take it this direction. They didn't think there was a law against it, but they did advise that, you know, maybe if you could figure out a way for them to earn that 50% instead of losing some of the 50%, it may look better in the event that you have an issue with an employee. But all of the things that we're checking are, we made sure that they're not, there's no variables. Either they did it or they didn't do it. So that's one of the things when you look at whatever you're auditing them on, I think that you need to be really clear is they did it or they didn't do it. But there's no way for you to look, well, maybe it was in this area. That way we felt like it was easier for us to fight any argument from an employee. I was like, well, did you do it or did you not do it? There's no back and forth on the audits.
Kelly, quick follow-up on that, because I'm in kind of the same position, I think, as Donna. I've really been wanting to bake those type of things into bonuses and so forth for a long time and just haven't gotten around to it yet. So that, you know, scorecard type thing that you do, that's an impressive number that you're doing, 10 a week per collector, roughly 40 a month, et cetera. How many, So what does that scorecard look like from a generality standpoint? You got like 10 items on there and they got to meet, you know, all 10. Is there a parade? Is the whole thing pass fail?
So the way we look at it is each audit's worth 100 points. They can lose anything from 1, 5, or 10 points. But once you like start doing it, it's easy to see what it is. I mean, you can kind of see the things that they normally. So as an auditor, once you get going, it works pretty well. The collectors have the list of things that they can lose points for, but it's all part of their production. So if they're following their work instructions, following their scripts, they won't have an issue with meeting and making sure they've done all of those things. And I think that the way that we do it is a new hire for the first 90 days, they're guaranteed 100% of their bonus if they reach it. But we're doing those audits so they can see for that first 90 days how their score and how it would affect what their bonus would be. And so when we implemented this for our current staff, I think we did it for like 4 months. I started their audit so they would see like, okay, this would have cost you $50. This would have cost you $25, so that they can really see how these errors affect the company and then them. So then before we implemented it, so it wasn't really a shock for the staff. They had plenty of time for them to see like what the expectation was and how they could reach it. And then really it's pretty simple. I just have the account number and then I put some words next to them, like, you know, this was done or not done. It also gives me an opportunity, especially for a small agency, to like give them thoughts like, hey, if you would have said this to this person or for this client, we really should be doing this kind of work. And, you know, remember, don't forget to, you know, work the co-maker, or, you know, you didn't update the spouse information. So, you know, kind of giving them some reminders for the accounts. And I think that they hold on to that feedback on the audits, because they're oftentimes they'll say, oh no, that was on my audit last week. I'm not going to make that mistake this week.
So Kelly, you have two bonus structures or platforms. One part is based on collection, how much they collected, and that part of the bonus is guaranteed. The other part of the bonus is performance and compliance. And they're separate.
So it's 100% based on their based on their commission or the money that they collect to the office. So that's our normal bonus structure. You know, if they reach this much, they get this much. If they reach this amount, they get that much. So that's the same. So like, let's say they ended up at $500 bonus based on what they collected, then they'd be guaranteed $250, and then they could earn up to $250 on their bonus performance, but they could lose up to $250. I looked at my average for last month, and our collectors averaged 91% of their performance bonus. So most of our collectors are above an A grade in my mind for their bonus. So most that 50%, that $250 that's not guaranteed, most of them got 91% of that.
Okay, thank you.
Our commission, this is Kelly. Our commission structure is very similar to that. We bonus on a lot of KPIs. So we'll bonus on, you know, performance, on how much you've collected, recovery rates, compliance, and we also included productivity in there. So how much are you on the phone?
So that is a huge one for us. I'm a huge call stat person. And one of the things that we evaluate is not the total calls per day, because that to me is meaningless, but the hour by hour, making sure they don't have too many, and they don't have, they didn't reach the level that they should have. If they have too many, they're not letting the phone ring long enough to even let the debtor answer. So they're just trying to catch up with the call stats. And that's why we don't do a total. But we will, that is a big part of the bonus, and you can get dinged for an unexplained hour of low calls. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you brought that up.
Yeah. Ours is focused on that. And it's also focused on how much time are you actually productive? Like you're here 8 hours a day. You're actually here 9 hours a day. You get 2 15-minute breaks and you're here for, you have an hour lunch. So you basically have 7.5 hours where you should be productive. What percentage are you actually logged in, taking calls, documenting accounts? So we measure that. So you have to have a 85% productivity rate, meaning out of the 7.5 hours, you have to be productive, 85% of that time, which gives them, I don't remember what the numbers are, but it gives them, 45 minutes of time that they're not doing anything at all.
That is yeah, I love to pay
for.
Employees when they just chit-chat with their neighbor for 20 minutes.
Yeah, so yeah, they'll go into, you know, update time or something like that. And we can measure that. We also measure their compliance. So there's always they get their commission, but then it's ticked away based on their productivity. So if you want to hit your goal, if you're not, and it's tiered. So if you're at, you know, 92% productivity, you're guaranteed 100% of your goal. But if you hit 83, you might not get any commission. Because if you're not productive, then you're also costing us money too.
That's right.
So, and we used to have compliance, people listening to compliance or listening to calls. So our QA team, and we've been able to reduce that based on a system where you mine calls and it automatically can check to see if there's compliance issues.
Am I allowed to ask a question that was not on the survey?
Yes, you absolutely are.
Okay. I'm wondering how many of the panelists in the group, the participants that are listening, have a no wireless device policy. We started off with a no cell phone policy, but now we know that there's a whole other host of products out there. So we have a no wireless policy. And that, we explained, that is not a no personal call policy. We've had that for 75 years. It's a compliance issue. We all know what a cell phone's capable of, and it's far beyond what a phone is. I know that for my friends out there in the industry that do not have a cell phone or wireless policy, their productivity, which goes right into what Kelly was talking about, is just across the board so much lower. And I can see it. You're in a text war with somebody, or you're on Facebook, and it's a total time zap. So I'm wondering how many out there have a no wireless policy on their collection floor.
This is Kelly Krieger. We actually have a no wireless policy on our collection floor. And in some of our areas, we actually have lockers where they can't even bring anything into the collection floor.
Same.
Not even their purse.
Oh, okay.
No, they can't bring anything. They have to leave it out in the lockers.
Yeah, thanks to a selfie on Facebook about, I don't know, few years back, we installed lockers. And I'm kind of on the fence about the iWatches. We've had a few people kind of observe, kind of checking text messages or looking at them. And so we've let them know, kind of everybody's been on warning that we probably will implement that next. One of the things that we do have for a few of our clerical staff is we do allow them to have wireless headphones, so they can put their cell phone in their locker, but allow them to listen to music off of their cell phone. And for some of our clerical staff, that's really been kind of something they really enjoy and feel. I mean, we pump music throughout the department on kind of our PCS playlist, but some of the staff really would like to just kind of get in their own zone, and so we found that that's really helpful. They just are allowed to put one ear in, and we don't find that it really affects their productivity. We actually saw an increase for our clerical staff.
This is Rick. This is where I break from the group. We should be doing that. You guys are selling me on why I need to do it. I don't have that policy in place right now. I'm aware of the compliance issue, right? I mean, we're dealing with incredibly sensitive data, you know, and so from a compliance, there's the compliance standpoint, and then there's also the productivity standpoint. So, yeah, I mean, I made myself a note here. I should certainly review this with my management team at our next huddle.
And Rick, you'll probably get, just like all of us probably have, a little employee pushback on that. You know, they're used to having their cell phones. What if I have an emergency? And da 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 da. I'm sure a lot of the panelists, you know, if you're looking at doing this, would agree. It's almost like a fear of implementing the policy. But I think just reassuring, first of all, there's a million phones in the building. They're called desk phones. They have a cord and everything, and they work. And so, you know, we tell people, give your school, give your husband, give whoever the public phone number, and to have you paged if there's an emergency. You can be reached. And then the other thing is we made it very, very clear that Your phone is not a phone. It's a voice record. It's a video record. I mean, it could look like it's off, and they could be recording the person giving the credit card number over the phone. It's masked in your computer, but they've got it on a recording. And if you have a disgruntled employee, even worse. And so we just make sure that they know this is not a personal call thing, or we don't trust you or anything like that. This is really an industry standard. You have to do this, and it's a data security issue. And I think you'll have a better response when it's explained that way.
I appreciate that. Yeah, because rolling that out would obviously be met with some pushback. So just a follow-up question to the other panelists. Recording, you know, like security cameras on your front door, on your cash, you know, on lockers. Does anyone have security cameras like on the call center floor, or is that a no-no as well, or is that a good idea?
I mean, we have security cameras throughout our building.
Gotcha. Okay. Because right now I've just got them on like the entrances and exits and stuff like that. But, you know, really considering, you know, putting them, expanding that, you know, to the call center floor and stuff like that. Thanks.
We've only got a couple of minutes left, and there've been a couple of questions that have come in that I'd like to get to. We'll just try and get to these as quickly as we can. With regards to career advancement, do any of the panelists have a successful practice for promoting career advancement and preparing employees for growth opportunities? Does anyone want to weigh in on that one?
I mean, I can. We have a talent management program where we rank all of our employees in regards to talent management and where they are in regards to growth. For example, we look at an employee, and if they're not going to be ready for growth within the next, you know, 12 to 24 months, then they're yellow. And they're green if they're ready for advancement within the next 12 months. So, and red would be like they're on the fence. We're not even sure if they're a good fit for the job or for our company. So we rank our employees yellow, red, yellow, or green. And then when we meet with them, we discuss why they are red, yellow, or green. So it opens up those conversations too. Not always are their positions open or available for growth, so that makes it a little bit difficult. So growth doesn't always mean, so our growth mentality here is growth doesn't always mean title. It also could mean a stretch assignment or new knowledge or a transfer to a different portfolio so you can become more well-rounded as an employee. So that's kind of how we do it. We do it every 6 months.
Excellent. I think Kelly Parsons or Brian, this is for you. Without having an application on file, how do you legally schedule and perform?
I saw the question in the Q&A, and like maybe I'm not doing it legally. I don't know. I always went on the fact. I always went on the fact that once I got a resume, I could call and ask them questions about it. So I just call, and usually it's 3 or 4 questions, kind of like, hey, tell me about your job experience in your own words, what's your computer skills like? And really, I don't really even care what they say. I really want to know how they're talking to me. I want to know like how they sound on the phone. I want to know, are they thoughtful in their answers? Because the thing I think about phone interviews that at least in my opinion, is that many people don't look at them as actual interviews. So like the kids are in the background, they're trying to take them in the car, like maybe they're on their break for a regular job. So I feel like you can't really judge it from like, hey, they're sitting in your office ready to do an interview. I really think that like what you're trying to do is weed through the people that are clearly not going to be a good fit. And so, like I said, maybe I'm not doing it legally, but that's always been my impression. So feel free to reach out if you know something I don't, like, you know.
Someone commented that they like the idea of using the hours on the phone as part of the measurement for the bonus. Is that done as an additional bonus, or do you subtract from the performance bonus and when implementing that?
I believe that was, I know that we track by the hour. So it's baked into the bonus. So let's say the collector, you know, has a $500 bonus, but they have, 4 hours of unexplained low calls, they'll get dinged $25 for that hour. And again, unexplained. I don't want to be so rigid that, you know, they're afraid to actually, you know, have a longer phone call when it needs to be. So unexplained, and then we will, it'll get docked from the $500 bonus. It'll just be a lower bonus because of that.
For ours isn't focused so much on low amount of calls for a certain period of time. Ours is more focused on you're sitting at your desk for a certain period of time. And if ours is a tiered program. So the goal is that you are productive 85% of the time that you're here. And so that takes out, obviously, that's for the 7.5 hours because of lunch and breaks. So you're productive for 85% of that time. And so we're tiered. So if you're not productive for 85% of your time, then you don't get commission. But if you're productive 95% of the time, then you get your full commission, and then it's tiered off of that. So it's basically, if you're not 85% productive, you lose commission, all of it.
And, you know, I think it's also important to take into consideration how you're actually set up. Like, our collectors do nothing but collect. That's it. They don't skip trace. They don't enter new business. They don't call our clients. We have other admin staff that does that. And so productivity for me is the calls. And if you're not calling, you are not doing your job. And I can see idle, how many minutes they were idle, meaning they weren't talking, dialing, or typing. But if you have staff that's doing multiple things like skip tracing, they're not always going to be on the phone. So you want to, like Kelly said, find a better way to measure their productivity.
Yeah, absolutely agree with that.
Excellent. Well, we've gone past the top of the hour, and nobody's jumped off. None of the panelists have jumped off yet, which is awesome. But I wanted to just kind of sort of wrap things up before I take up too much of their time and they never do this for me again. I'd like to go maybe give everybody sort of, 30, 45 seconds just to maybe offer any sort of last parting words or words of wisdom on the topic before we wrap up. So if you don't mind, love to hear some last words. Rick, we'll start with you.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. I would say the only thing we didn't really talk about from a KPI standpoint is that we look at and monitor is RPCs, specifically RPC conversion rate. Really important. I think it's management's job to put the right accounts, the right debt, the right phone number, et cetera, in front of the collector. I think it's the collector's job then to convert that opportunity into a payment or a secured payment, or at the very least a promise to pay, or, you know, some sort of traction at all. So we track that as a RPC success rate or conversion rate. If you're not doing that right now, it's kind of an eye opener, and then you can kind of look at that in comparison to your top performers from a revenue standpoint. That's been kind of an interesting discussion on our end.
Excellent. Thanks. Kelly Krueger.
I think we covered everything I thought would be interesting to talk about. I think it's, for me, one of the things that we didn't talk about is pay. And I would have loved to have had us dig into that a little bit more, because I'm seeing on this report that we pay, several people pay their collector's salary plus commission. And I find that interesting, because salary, I don't know about other laws, but in our state, you have to make, I think it's over $37,000 in order for you to pay salary to that. And we're in small town Iowa. So, our collectors don't make that. They do with commission, but it has to be their base. So I would love to hear maybe get more information on salary and how people are paying their collectors.
I smell another webinar. Donna, your parting wisdom.
Okay. Well, first I agree with Kelly. I'd like to learn more about that, because that was surprising to me. But I think my overarching, this is my compliance side coming out, when you're thinking about what you want to incentivize and baking compliance into your bonuses and how you're, you know, the cell phone thing and how you want to run your shop, one of the guiding principles that I've kind of followed is, you know, the law is not the goal. It's the bottom bar. It's the least you can do is abide by the law. Make your practices above reproach. Abiding by the law, black and white, can actually still get you into trouble. So I think really incorporating the law, obviously, and then building upon that best practices to really make sure that that your staff is compliant and that they're more of a moneymaker for you than a legal risk. So those are my parting words of advice.
Thank you. Kelly Parsons O'Brien.
I don't know what else can be said here. I mean, I think we covered a lot. I think that we probably could be on the phone for another hour still covering all of this material. And I think, you know, for our agency, I think that the importance is about creating an environment where we're helping people. And I think that if you can do that, then and the collector really values what they're doing, I think the turnover issue is minimal. I think that you can increase performance from the staff just because they want to do a good job for themselves and also for the consumers they're helping. And so I think for our office, that's really the most important change we've made recently, is really talking about what can we do for the consumer? How can we help them? How can we make each call better? And we found quite a turnaround in our staff and, you know, kind of these issues with, you know, maybe not making as many calls or all of the kind of the issues that we talk about that we as managers think about. I think that a lot of that stuff has kind of changed in our office because they want to be on the phones. They want to be collecting. They want to be helping the next consumer. And so for us, we got rid of a lot of those little things by just kind of changing our mentality and the way that we look at what we're doing here each day.
Excellent. Well said. Before I let everyone go, personally, I want to thank Rick, Kelly, and Donna for their insights and their time today. This webinar clearly would not have been possible without their participation. I also wanted to thank Dax for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.dax.com to learn more about the company or call 1-800-873-2527 for more information. You can also, again, download a free copy of the Employee Performance Survey report by going to www.dax.com/employee-survey-download. Thanks to everybody who participated today. Please stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for more news and webinars in the very near future. Hope everyone enjoys the rest of your day. Thank you very much.
Have a great day. Thank you.